Well, I would like to hold my little hand, and we will run, we will. We will crawl, we will. I would like to hold my little hand, and we will run, we will. We will crawl. Send me on my way. And folks, the only place I want to be sent to right now is listening to the podcast you're listening to right now, the number one podcast of One Hit Wonders. Nay, the number one podcast of all podcasts, One Hit Wonder Why, where we review One Hit Wonder albums. Buckle up, boppers. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the One Hit Wonder Why podcast, the podcast where we review one-hit wonder albums, and we wonder why. I am your host, Eric Hossenjaeger, a fellow music nerd, a fellow. If this is your first time, welcome. If this is not your first time, welcome again. I'm so glad you clicked the play button, you pressed the play button, however you did it. Thank you. Boy, howdy. It's been a bit since the last episode dropped. I apologize, but we're back. We're back again. Shady's back again. So I am ready and raring to go for this episode. Episode 8 here. For those of you who know, I'll give a brief overview of how this show is basically, I love music. I'm going to get right down into it. I love music. And growing up, I love music reviews. I would go to bookstores or music stores, 38 magazines, and back when they had magazines there, and you know the physical things that you actually turn the pages for, and I'd always go to the back of a a Spin or a Rolling Stone and see the album reviews where they usually have it, and I would just look, read them, and know like which music to get, which to avoid, and I'd take their opinions into account and everything, and yeah, because being being a kid, I only had a certain amount, and I'd always would buy certain CDs based on recommendations and reviews. So I always love that aspect. And part of a splintering off of me loving music, I love one-hit wonders here. And for those of you who know, one-hit wonders are bands or artists that just have one mainstream hit that you know here, and the rest, they kind of fade away for whatever reason. But me, I'm taking a more positive approach of one-hit wonders. I want to know the other songs of a one-hit wonder on the album that the one hit on here. So, for example, I did the first episode, I did Nainggolan's Torn. I want to know what the other songs were. So I went and reviewed the rest of the songs on that album. So this is my journey into seeing if there's any underrated music gold or there's some music mold here. And so I'll give a brief overview, history of the artist. I'll give a review, kind of in-depth review of the actual hit, and then I'll review the rest of the songs on the album here, and I have a very scientific, here at One Hit Wonder HQ, a very scientific scale called bops, and the higher the bops of each track gets, the better. So five bops, you get, that's ultimate, unskippable, awesome track. Three bops is just average, okay. One bop, oh boy, howdy, pee-wee, yucky, you want to avoid at all costs. And so each track I'll rate based on bops, and then based on the album itself, I'll tally up all the bops, and I'll divide it by the amount of tracks on the album, and then the final album will get a final rating based on it. So the higher the bops, the better here. Again, a very scientific scale, all right? It's very, in-depth. I definitely, did a lot of research, a lot of Excel spreadsheets going on here, and I came to the conclusion of bops here, my musical rating of bops here at One Hit Wonder HQ. So that's kind of just a brief overview here of how this show goes. So glad you joined here. So, without further ado, this is episode 8. We're looking at the 1994 hit Send Me On My Way by Rusted Root. But before we do, let us look at the music scene at the time here. So this album, the song, came out in 1994, And Rusted Root, for those of you who are not aware, they're kind of what's considered a jam band. And to kind of understand what a jam band is, we got to go back a little bit a ways here. And it was kind of jam bands didn't really get to be really, really big until the 60s, where, you know, society underwent a global cultural schism between traditional values and new ideas brewing among young people, especially on college campuses. You know, the 60s, it was a era of non-ironic revolution and counterculture, where the existing social constructs of race, genre, and politics, and music were challenged. I think a good example of this was, you know, the Beatles, the biggest band ever in the world. You know, when they decided not to ever tour again in 1966, they responded later with the huge album of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, a work that, you know, saw them, you know, dive headfirst into experimentation that's only possible in the studio. And that level of experimentation, I felt like was a kind of a tipping off point for, you know, bands becoming more, you know, different, thinking outside the box. Before, you know, the Beatles went off a tour, you had the traditional like 3 minute, 2.5 minute pop songs that were very, you know, sugar pop rock that, you know, the Beatles did a lot of, but I think they wanted to branch off and do something different. So you saw a lot of experimentation. So, you know, the term jam band kind of started to come about in the 60s and the Grateful Dead. I think when you think jam bands, you think the Grateful Dead. I feel like they were the ones that they were the torchbearers of this movement that relied heavily on improvisation and total disregard of predictable outcomes. Jam band becomes a umbrella word to describe acts that went beyond the traditional songers, and it incorporated influences from other genres. You know, the term jam band typically, you know, conjures up images of barefoot, blissed out hippies grooving out to an extended guitar solo in a grassy field. But, you know, there's bands that, you know, it's labeled under this term that's, you know, they play extremely long shows with varying set lists, which, you know, they have evolved and they rework their songs, introducing, you know, kind of highly creative segues and never-ending instrumental performances. So no two shows were even remotely alike, which is why, you know, the music of the Grateful Dead wasn't commercially popular, and it didn't get radio play. Instead, the Grateful Dead, the band, they grew their name through their expansive and largely improvisational live shows. Their 3 minute songs were often extended to 20 minutes or more, taking listeners of journeys of sonic and spiritual, you know, journeys here. So, as the 60s, you know, ended, the 70s saw a lot more kind of jam bands come about here. It was out of Georgia. The blues rock band, the Allman Brothers, played in a bunch of shows. They built up their following. One of their biggest hits, Rambling Man, which you'll hear everywhere on classic rock stations. You had the 1970s really was a decade that blossomed with the jam band tendencies. Even though that really jam band, the term wasn't really coined until much later, bands had the spirit of it. So you had the mainstream artists like Leonard Skinner, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, all had, you know, like long, epic songs and everything, that were for, you know, sometimes for the radio, but, other times not that, you know, they had their three and a half minute, you know, song, Get In, Get Out, so, you know, appease the record company, but, more often than not, you had a lot of different fusions of genres like psychedelic, country, hard rock, and you know, Latin rock was also a big thing. Santana burst on the scene in the 1970s as well. So the 70s just was, there's no shortage of these mega arena rock outfits that had these jam band tendencies. As the decade ended and the 80s hit, MTV was in full force here. electronic, new wave, hit, and, everyone was obsessed. And not to say like these, you know, these artists, these bands didn't, you know, weren't around. At least some of them were. Led Zeppelin disbanded in 1980 after their drummer John Bonham passed away. But, like they weren't as, you know, prevalent as they were in the 70s. And it just, it's a different, culture shock, for the 80s of just moving on to, you know, technology, into music and that becoming more of a hit as it goes here. But jam bands were still a thing, but it became more underground. So, you know, as the 80s hit, more artists started to kind of develop more different types of genres. And as the decade kind of neared, we saw a few more bands that kind of spread out of the jam band tendency here. Another Georgia bred band like the Allman Brothers, Widespread Panic, came to. And another 80s band that kind of transcended more as the we hit the end of the 80s was Phish.
Through the window of the church, a storm began to rage, and Esther knew the time had come to flee.
Where are all my Phish heads at here? I don't know. I don't know if that's what they call Phish fans, but I think it's a cute term. Anywho, yeah. So the mid-late 80s was definitely a time of these Spread Panic and Phish, big giant mega bands to kind of develop their craft in the 80s and get huge in the 90s. And speaking of the 90s, the jam bands became huge and more kind of a resurgence with bands like Blues Traveler. And probably the biggest ones of them all was Dave Matthews Band in 1994 with their Grammy Award-winning hit Under the Table and Dreaming. So Dave Matthews Band was definitely considered kind of a gateway into, you know, other jam bands. They were like the big mainstream act. Maybe a lot of artists viewed Dave Matthews Band as kind of like sellouts, but whatever. I mean, that's really silly to think. They were good. And, you know, for me personally, I enjoy Dave Matthews Band. Growing up, I definitely had a strong hatred, a misplaced hatred towards the Dave Matthews Band. Only reason being is my graduating class of in high school, where I felt they were, you know, like these snooty, preppy, you know, preppy kids that, you know, not the most nicest. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people, you know, I've kind of gone through that cliques of people, and they've always listened to Dave Matthews Band, for at least, you know, growing up for me here. And I always saw, you know, in the school parking lot, I'd always see that stupid little logo ad, and that would just send rage shivers through my spine. It really silly, really silly. But like that always brought a lot of weird, misplaced dislike for the Dave Matthews Band, because I'm like, oh, I'm never gonna listen to them. Oh, I hate them. But you know, as I've gotten older and wiser, maybe wiser, I don't know, maybe at least older, I've gone to appreciate Dave Matthews Band, and I can. Can safely say he and the rest of the band very good, and that's my 180 turnaround of my Dave Matthews Band story here. So anywho, what was I talking about? Right, other people into jam bands, and it got other artists kind of getting more mainstream hit, which leads us to our topic for today's episode, and that is the artist or the band Rusted Root of their 1994 hit "Send Me on My Way." But let's take a look at Rusted Root itself. Rusted Root consists of founder Michael Glubicki, born January 21st, 1971, out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Glubicki always had a love of music and live entertainment. When he was a kid, his father, a construction worker, played in a bunch of polkas and on an accordion while Glubicki would play the drums. And additionally, Glubicki looked up to his musical cousins and grandfather, who was a steel mill worker who played guitar and banjo. So music was a big part of Michael's life here. And in a few interviews I've read, he said seeing the polkas performed live kind of invigorated him. for being a little kid and going to these polka dances, seeing people like really party heavily and dancing and going crazy and stuff, looking at all the suits and the glittery dresses, walking around, hearing the music. That was a huge rock show to him as a kid. And so as Golubicki kind of grew older, he saw a bunch of concerts at the University of Pittsburgh and the Carnegie Mellon University, which inspired him to jam as a drum and guitar duo with a high school friend. In another interview I saw, it says, in our high school, we weren't allowed to do anything political. You would actually get into trouble if you passed out flyers or anything. There was some rule or law against it, and you would get expelled. So it was all fun and rebellious to start a political group, end quote. Being in high school, you want to rebel. It was a perfect time to do it. So Golubicki began networking with other high schools, and he solicited college professors to conduct events and educational seminars in which they would teach about the environment and nuclear disarmament. And in Nicaragua, easy for me to say, and world events of the day here. And Golubicki would say in an interview, I even started going to Catholic schools, and then I have to buy the outfit, put on a tie, and go in there and act like I went to this school to encourage participation in the events, end quote. So he was so believing of all these causes here that he dressed up as a student of a school, which I believe is probably illegal, probably not kosher. But hey, you know, it was a different time. But I found was a little interesting here. The summer before dropping out of college in 1987, Michael went to Nicaragua for some volunteer work as part of a sister city program that Pittsburgh had with struggling nations overseas. And when Golubicki returned, he became disillusioned with school and depressed. Quote, when I came back, I was really charged up to kind of change everything that was wrong with the world. Being 17 or 18 years old, that's what you think you can do, Golubicki said, laughing. Writing songs kind of improved his outlook, and he rented out a studio to lay the foundation of Rusted Root. Another interview, my first exposure, well, I didn't actually go out and start buying African drumming records, he said. I remember coming across a mixtape of various African drumming bands. I don't remember who played on it, but it got me started playing rhythms. So Golubicki had a very strong drumming background that kind of surged his musical influence. So after dropping out of college in 1987, he and other band member Liz Berlin, the vocalist, he began arranging songs in 1988 that would eventually be the Rusted Root album. And so the rest of the members of the band, Liz Berlin on vocals and Jim Donovan on drums and Patrick Norman on bass guitar and percussion. So the world of music genre definitely got into Golubicki's, brain, just kind of him experimenting, jamming, if you will. And in a few interviews I've seen this, Peter Gabriel's 1986 So was a big, big influence, and it kind of confirmed Golubicki's was on the right track. The big giant hit, In Your Eyes. An excellent album, by the way. So Golubicki just kind of confirmed his interest in wanting to pursue this type of music that he was interested in, knowing that there was a demand for world music that Peter Gabriel bought. So Rusted Root, they toured a bunch in late 80s, early 90s. In 1992, the Rusted Root really released their own album called Cruel Sun. The album was soon heard on more than local college radio stations. It went on to sell 100,000 copies, which for the time for a small band was a big deal. This caught the attention of major label record executives at Mercury, and it signed to a big giant record contract. Rusted Root, they released their major label debut, When I Woke, the album that has Send Me On My Way on August 23rd, 1994. At its peak, this album hit on the Billboard 200, number 51, going platinum, selling a million copies. When I Woke was recorded live in 6 weeks in Pasadena, California, with all the members playing together and doing very few takes. There's also, off the band's debut album, Cruel Sun, there are a few versions that they take from that album and kind of repurpose, recondition. And you'll see as they're on the review here, which ones are and what they do. So I'm betting that's why the album didn't take as long, because they already had a few of the songs in the hopper here. So when I woke, it was the producer. Very interesting lineage here is Bill Bottrell. He is a known music industry vet, songwriter, and producer of in California. He was in the late 70s, early 80s that really blossomed. He got connections with the Jacksons, ELO, Michael Jackson, Madonna. He engineered and mixed Like a Prayer for her, the Traveling Wilburys, Tom Petty, Sheryl Crow. Just the list goes on and on. Just absolute, like, stellar list. So Rusted Root, they were definitely lucky to have someone of this caliber to kind of steer him. I will say, this is a tangent here. So Bill Bottrell, he was on Michael Jackson's 1991 Dangerous. I did not know this going into here, but doing research, he was so there's a song on Dangerous called Black or White, very very popular song, very very awesome song. But the rapping part, which I, you know, a few years ago I listened to it for the first time in a long time, and I forgot the rapping part was there.
Protection, the gangs cleansing nations, causing grief in human relations. It's a turf war on a global scale. I'd rather hear
it. I do not care for the rapping part at all. Not to say the lyrics were bad, it's just the delivery. And I always wondered, like, who does that? Well, it turns out, none other than Bill Bottrell himself actually was the rapping. I first thought it was like maybe, you know, an unknown rapper that, you know, just didn't make it big, but it was actually the producer of, that song, Bill Bottrell. So I'm glad I connected the audio dots, at least for me. There's other listeners that didn't know who did that rapping part. Hey, here you go. There's some free information. You're welcome. So yeah, I'm just glad I satisfied my curiosity and hopefully some of yours here. So that's been your segment of complaining about songs from 1991, brought to you by me, Eric Kostenjager. Let's get back on track here with the podcast, and let's talk about the number one hit of Rusted Root, and that is Send Me On My Way. Now, I wasn't super familiar with the song. I'd heard the bits and pieces on satellite radio, but I've never actually listened to the full part before. And I always thought this song was that Paul Simon song, You Can Call Me Al. Right, I'm not crazy. It sounds a little like the song we're talking about right now. But if you call me Al and send me away, you can't deny there's some similarities. One being the tempo, but also the flutes. The flutes are having a grand old fun time, and both have a very similar flute solos. I mean, I'd say that more than similar, it's kind of the same, but nothing wrong with that. No shade. You draw inspiration where you can draw it. Fun fact, You Can Call Me Al, that came out in 1986, also came out in 1986, the same year, Peter Gabriel's influential record, So, that had In Your Eyes, that also influenced Michael Gobicki of Rusted Root. So, it all kind of, you know, triangulates here around the influence somehow. So I always like to make those connections. So very, very interesting fact, I find. So that is the You Can Call Me Al reference here. So, but the song, Send Me Away, let's get back to it here. So this song came out on the band's debut album, the lesser, you know, 1992 Cruel Sun. And it's definitely a little different here. I'll play a little sample and I'll discuss. The way Glubicki goes, whoa, like a little bit in that part. He's having a little more fun with it in this version, I guess. But
the overall recording here on the debut album version is it's a little rougher around the edges. You can tell, you know, they didn't have a big shot producer at the helm. The bones of the song are there. I mean, as you can tell in that clip, it's pretty similar to it. It's a little faster at some parts, and it seems some of the parts are a little chaotic. And the bass, it's definitely mixed heavily in it, maybe too much. But again, this is the longest version. This is about clocks in at least just under 5 minutes of it. And then the album version is like 4:19. And then the single version is just under 4 minutes. So the ideal version of this song is definitely the single version. I think that was a smart move on Bottrell's part to kind of just trim it a little bit for radio consumption because, hey, 3.5 minutes, you're pushing 4. Watch out. I know I hate that formula way of thinking, but for, you know, there's a reason why it gets played. At least for the time here for the radio, you need to have a certain time length for your listening audience here. So definitely interesting to hear the original version here of Send Me On My Way. Right from the bat here, Globicki's vocals is, interesting. I got some YouTube comments that I got from the music video here, and I just want to read a few here. Some positive ones here first. This one is, this song just sounds like a good road trip with your best mates before the end of summer, and I love it so much. And another one is, they're like a bunch of art in their summer vacation on a trip around the world, which this comment is referring to the music video here. And then lastly, this definitely comes in handy here is, this guy sings like he's in Doctor's handwriting, which, again, just there's a lot of scatting a little bit on Globicki's part. In an interview, he admits in an interview here is there some no words at all, just syllables sound just right with the music. He says he just never got quite around to replacing the syllables he injected in the music. So he just felt the rhythm of his mouth and just went with it. So, yeah, that's definitely different vocal style here. And I couldn't, speaking of similarities of, you know, we're getting down the rabbit hole of similarities here, but I couldn't help but think, and maybe again, it's just me, but I couldn't, the similarities of one Enrique Iglesias. Now bear with me. Enrique Iglesias, famous Latin singer of the 90s and early aughts around there. And maybe now, I don't know, maybe Enrique has a big following still, but I couldn't help but notice that Enrique Iglesias and Michael Globicki are pretty similar as sounding. I don't know. I have a little sample here. I'll play you and I'll let you know what I think. Again, am I crazy? I don't know how many times I can say am I crazy, but maybe I'm crazy. Again, still. That's the first thing that came to mind when I listened to the full version of the song is, hey, this guy sounds like Enrique Iglesias. And I don't know what it says about me, where my mind went, but maybe also, too, I just wanted an excuse to play Bali Mos because that song slaps. So, but again, it was a similarity that I had to get it out of my brain and into this recording. So again, you're welcome. But as for the song itself, let me play. I don't think I played the actual album version or the single version here. So let me just play a short clip and I'll give you my rating here. Again, man, what a song, what a song. All right, so there's a lot I like about this song. Just the upbeat nature of it, the tempo, the funky bass, the vocal scatting, the flute whistle, all right, copped from Paul Simon. It works here. Everything's great. And the lyrics, very, very fun, kind of introspective. At least for me, what I got from it is the song about wishing that you talk to your past self and help you through some of the tough times, you know, particularly when you're, you know, as a kid, you know, some of the lyrics says, I would like to reach out my hand and I would like to hold my little hand. The hand being the normal size and the hand being little is when you were younger. So hence I'm thinking the meaning of the song. There's a million meanings, I guess, but for me anyway, is you making mistakes as a child or going through tough times and just, you know, your older self kind of reassuring, your younger self that, you know, just, you know, it's go back and tell us how we feel, or if we feel sad, it'd be much easier to just get on your way and, go forward and send me on a way. Send me on to which way? That's up for you to decide. You, the listener. So, just a, you know, good coming of age type song. I can see why it was played in a million commercials, a million movies. It works. It works. So there's not too much. I guess after a few times you hear it, you're like, okay, I'm kind of done with it, but I definitely still enjoy listening to this song after listening to it so many times for the podcast. It's a good upbeat, up-tempo song. Sometimes you need that in your life. And as sometimes cheesy as it can seem, I enjoyed it, greatly. I guess the album version, I wouldn't say it's the most ideal. The single version, is definitely one of the highlights here, but definitely, go back and listen to the one that's on the debut album. Very interesting little mix here. But as far as my rating, here's the debut of the ratings here on this episode here. And send me on my way. You get five bops here. So perfect five bops here. So let's go to the rest of the album here. So how I'm going to work is I'm going to just go down the track list and I'm going to rate each song. So let's get down to the first opening track, and that is Drum Trip. Okay, there's not a whole lot to go into this quote-unquote song, the opening track. It's just like a freak-out session. It sounds like something that would be played at a live show before the rest of the set list. It's not something, again, meanders. There's a lot of chanting and whatnot, and, you know, it's supposed to set the tone for the album, but I can't recommend this song at all. Quote unquote song at all for consumption for the ears. It's very short, but it goes on. It feels like it goes on long. So again, it's supposed to be kind of like a preamble. I get it. I know a lot of albums have that, but I don't like it. Not a fan. So that's something I would recommend putting on your playlist for the song. So it's the song Drum Trip, the opening track. I will give you one bop here. All right. So on to the next one. Track two is Ecstasy. So this song was really good. I really liked it. It was an up-tempo Latin-type jam here, as you could tell. High energy, very nicely mixed acoustic guitar solo you heard, you know, at each verse is very nice. Vocally, Globicki, you get his flavor right off the bat, and a very strong gusto in his voice. The bass is mixed really nice. The lyrics, it's, you know, kind of the topic is against the greedy mainstream society war machine. You know, some of the lyrics, get me off this backwards ride, take away your greedy way and go, wasted arms, wasted legs wrapped around this machine, military machine. So pretty much, you know, it's par for the course for this type of, the message here that's going, but nothing wrong with that. Tells the message, tells it well. But again, the song, about 5 minutes, it starts to wear out its welcome a little bit. I felt like maybe a little over a minute left. It seemed like it was a good ending point, but for a lot of songs on this record, it just feels like it kind of goes a little longer than it needs to. A little more like, again, nothing wrong with a little jam, but 5 minutes is a lot to ask of. If you're going to have some extra variety at the end, great, but I felt like it kind of peters out a little bit. But right from the get-go, Ecstasy is really, it's a really fun song, a really good guitar work. So I really enjoyed it for everything that it's included here. So for rating for Ecstasy, you get four bops here. So that was track two. Track three, we already talked about, was Send Me On My Way. So we'll talk about track four, Cruel Sun.
This should be love. Power plays while the people die. Let it burn. And protect us from this cruel sun.
So Cruel Sun here, it's a first slower track of the album, and I it's getting there as far as the tempo. I don't mind it. But when it gets to the chorus, I'm not feeling it with the backing vocals. It doesn't have a strong melody to kind of hook yourself onto. There's a 3-minute interlude that kind of picks up, but the acoustic guitar plucking solo transitioning into a regular solo that doesn't go anywhere. It kind of feels like it meanders around. There's a second plucking solo I like, and probably could have been the only solo left in. Again, less is more in some of these cases, but I know in, you know, these jam bands, sometimes they want to throw everything in the kitchen sink included. And I felt like there's so many, you know, different ideas. Not all of them are going to gel well here. And again, lyrically, it's another anti-war song. Why does war kill only the small man? Power plays while die, and it's kind of dour with bloody faces lifted to the sky. Do you want to run to a future left behind? Again, it's something we already kind of heard on just a couple tracks ago in Ecstasy, and now we're hearing it again. But kind of a slower plotting pace that doesn't go whole elsewhere. So yeah, not super feeling this song here. So Cruel Sun, you get two bops here. So track five here, the next track is Cat Turn Blue. So, my positives here for the song, that bass is thumping and bumping. Love how it's mixed. Love the playing here on it. This song, Cat Turn Blue, is a re-recording from the band's first self-produced album. And, it's a little different here. I'll play a little clip. So that version, or the first version, had that Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower, which you just heard. Rusted Brit just randomly played that in the middle of the song here. I thought it was nice. I was expecting maybe we're going to hear on this version, but no, that was taken out maybe due to copyright reasons, understandably. But I thought that was a nice little touch. But as far as on the When I Woke version of Cat Turn Blue, the flute, again, coming back, maybe a little too much. The chanting background vocals don't add a lot. It's just like, it's a little repetitive. It's like, bum, 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 bum. It's a little, it kind of goes, there's no dynamics. There's no change in the song. It kind of just stays a little flat. And as far as lyrics, I have no earthly idea. I'm not even going to pretend. I looked up the lyrics. I don't know. I have no idea. So it felt like just a bunch of nonsense. So for Cat Turn Blue, I will rate it two bops. It would have been one, but you know, that bass is a thumping and a bumping, and I love it. So two bops for Cat Turn Blue. To track six, and that is Beautiful People.
Such your addiction, hating to see what was passed on back. I saw the shame and wondered why I should live and die.
So this kind of has a Led Zeppelin soul ballad acoustic, you know, feel to it with again, flute flourishes, surprise. But, you know, I liked it took its time. Some background chanting. I liked the very quiet track. But for the subject matter, which lyrically, it seems like it's about a father's addiction to drugs or a dark period of life where suicide may have taken place. because some of the lyrics is, I saw the same inside your addiction, hating to see what was passed on by, being passed on to him, and I saw the shame and wondered why I should live and die. So yeah, it's a heavy subject matter, and it stays kind of true to its core. And but I overall, as a overall song, it definitely doesn't have a lot of variety to keep you at keep you listening. It's the same kind of 3-4 chords, plucking notes here, and it doesn't go anywhere to really grab your attention. So for Beautiful People, again, great lyrics, just not enough to really hook you in music wise. You get two bops for Beautiful People. All right, so for track 7, it's Martyr. So with Martyr, again, this is another example where this was on their 1992 debut, Cruel Son. It's pretty similar, and it's a little longer and maybe a little more scatting. And the mix is a little quieter. Here, I'll play a sample here of the first version. Again, those were just some of the differences. Again, I'm always fascinated when bands take a previous version of a song and try to repurpose it, maybe tailor it up a little more, clean it up, changes they make. So I always found that interesting. As far as this, you know, this album version of Martyr here, so backing, the backing vocals definitely give it a extra depth. I feel there's more energy, and it's a big change of tempo from the previous track. It's a constant up-tempo song. But then we get to the bridge, and it takes it to, you know, a darker tone with the thundering drums and the ominous key change. That's nice. The snare drum roll back into the structure of the song. It's a nice transition. And also, dat bass. I'm all about dat bass. I love it. Love it how it's mixed. And the bongo solo. All right. Can't go wrong with that. Definitely a fun song. Some of it, lyrically, it's pretty self-explanatory of playing the martyr. Hey, mister, come down and see your misery. Some of it's hokey, like the lyrics, like, I was left swirling in your pool of aggression. Little hokey there, but overall, you know, it was a fun, decent track. Again, the tempo makes you want to move a little bit, groove a little bit, and yeah, I like the variety. Not super great, but like also just, not too bad. So for a rating for Martyr, I will give it 3 bops here. So on to track 8, and that is Rain. So yeah, you know, this seems more like a song that's meant to play live, like a lot of Rusted Root songs here. Right from the get-go, my first knee-jerk reaction is this sounds a lot like a Blues Traveler song here. And yeah, you know, Blues Traveler came around this time, so they were huge. So I see, and also I believe Rusted Root toured with Blues Traveler. So again, some influence spilling over, I get it. This was just like a fun old blues jam session, up-tempo, a little ditty. Also, the lyrically, not a whole lot. If you're counting at home, Rain is said 24 times to be exact. And also, Joe has got to raise that barn. That's pretty much the only lines. Rain and Joe has got to raise that barn. So not a lot of meat to it lyrically, but this is just meant to be kind of a fun jam live song, trying to recreate that in an album form. Always hard to do, but I enjoyed this. This is for what it was. I liked it. It was different too off the rest of the songs in the album, so I enjoyed it for what it was. So, Rain, you get 3 bops. 3 bops. So, on to track 9, and that is Food and Creative Love. Big Again, you heard that right. It's another blues jam here, back to back. So this song starts off really slow. And the first half, it feels like a royalty-free track in how generic it kind of sounds. But then it starts to hit the gas pedal, becomes a driving shuffle blues beat, like you heard in the sample here. And there's, again, it's a lot of scatting. I think at this point of the album, I'm like, okay, it's getting a little tougher from... I mean, this song seems like it was made for live performance. And also the scatting, there's not a lot of lyrics. I can't really, you know, analyze too much from it. It's, you know, leap from the wounds, blood started to flow, big hand, here he comes again. I don't know. It's again, the song is meant to be played live and kind of it feels like a transition song. And also just being very similar to the previous track is just not, I don't know. Not ideal to have back-to-back similar songs here. So for Food and Creative Love, for rating for bops, you get two bops here. So on to track 10, the next track, and that is Lost in the Crowd.
And you kicked me some food. Boy, it was nice. Be here with you.
So this one's a laid-back little ditty here. I like the breakdown. The breakdown has a nice acoustic bluesy solo, very solid. I like the layered vocal chants, like you heard in the clip there. And the last 30 seconds or so invokes some like early Red Hot Chili Peppers freak out that I'd like to hear more throughout the song with that funky bass mixed in. So yeah, again, product of its time, Red Hot Chili Peppers, super huge. Again, kind of gleaning some influences here and there, but the last part of the song I really enjoyed. Again, I guess some of the stuff I didn't like was the, again, more scatting, very little lyrics. The crux of the song is, you know, about homelessness, but it's done in a way where it's like there's not a lot of substance to it to really make you think about it. And Not a whole lot lyrically, but musically, it's at least a little change of pace from the previous two tracks here. So for Lost in a Crowd, I will give you three bops. So on to the next track, at track 11, Laugh as the Sun. Positives for the song. Again, up-tempo groove. The bridge is very good, has a nice driving tempo. The mood of this song, it feels like a riding in the desert, you know, like the vibe of it. And ending portion of the song has the sitar. And also there's a breakdown of the breakdown. There's some variety to it. Lyrically, it seems like it's just being afraid of the night. Like the lyric says, I get so nervous when you leave my world. It seems like someone's afraid of the dark. Which, you know, nothing wrong with that. Maybe it's in the, perspective of the sun. I don't know. I tried analyzing the song. I don't think I succeeded, but yeah, lyrics take a backseat in some cases here for some songs. But, again, the song goes on for almost 6 minutes. Maybe a touch too much. Again, there's some good ideas, but it just feels a little overstuffed. But overall, it was okay. So again, good groove, good bridge, good driving tempo. Laugh as the Sun, for a rating, you get three bops. So on to track 12, and that is Infinite Tambora. Okay. All right. Well, you know, what I had to say about the opening track, Drum Trip, pretty much is what I have to say about this one here. Again, it's about a 2 minute interlude of said tambora, which is like a sitar. You know, it leads into the last track. But again, this seems like it's a interlude. But again, it's listed as a track, so I have to rate it. And oh boy, it's almost 2 minutes. It feels like about an hour. Again, I have, there's just nothing to it. It's I don't know what I feel. I think after this album, I don't know how I feel about, you know, separate tracks that lead into other songs. Just have the intro of, you know, instead of having a, you know, small nothing intro for a track by itself, include it on the other song. Just combine it. I don't know. I'm starting to learn more about music every day here. So yeah, Infinite Tambora. It's just, there's nothing to it. Not a lot to say, but it leads into the last track. But there's just that, and the chanting, like, ooh! I'm like, okay, we get it. We're, you know, you're in a woodsy campfire. You've experimented with some things here and there. I get it. But this song, not good here. I'm just going to say a quote unquote song also, I should say. So Infinite Tambora, you get one bop here. So on to the last final track, track 13 of When I Woke, and that is Back to Earth.
Back to the high feeling, back to the earth I'm hoping. Back to the earth I'm feeling, back to the earth I'm hoping.
I enjoyed this. This was a nice, I don't know, on this the history of this podcast, if we had a satisfying conclusion for a song on an album, but I really like this song. The drums are mixed louder and louder towards the end, and it gives it a nice, satisfying conclusion. It's a great acoustic sound, good laid-back groove at the beginning, the layered vocal chants definitely fit the mood of the song, and in around 3-ish minutes or so after, it kicks up a notch, and the tempo gets, you know, progressively faster and faster, and then yeah, it gets in a nice freak out session the last couple minutes. And I didn't mind. The song went by fast, having, you know, a little extra dynamics to it, a little variety. Lyrically, I'm not going to pretend what the lyrics mean. I mean, I'm looking at it here. Many divisions of you, many divisions of me, many divisions of you, many divisions of me when we are so young. Hey, yo, mom, mama, free my soul. I don't know what that means. I'm not going to pretend, but. You know, at this point, at the end of the album, who cares? It's like, just go on the trip, man. Go on the trip. The drum trip. So I like this song. This was a nice, good conclusion. I'd be at the, you know, the previous track being the, prelude. I didn't care for it, but this one was just a fun conclusion to an album here. So back to the earth for a rating for bops, you get four bops. And with that is the complete review of Rusted Roots, When I Woke, with the one hit, Send Me On My Way. So I have rated every song on this album. I have accumulated all the bops here. So all the bops on this record is 35 bops all together here. So 35 bops, and you divide that by 13 tracks on the album, and you get a drum roll. 2.7 for a average rating of bops here. So it's 2.7 here. It's a little below average, and I'd say that's a fair rating. The science does not lie here at One Hit Wonder Why headquarters. So yeah, I'd say there's some, you know, there's some standout songs I would recommend. Obviously, the one hit, Send Me On My Way, obviously that'd be the top one, but also Ecstasy, very fun groove as well. Nice up-tempo Latin-type jam. And then, you know, maybe take one of the blues songs, like Rain. Rain was okay. And then finally, the last track, Back to the Earth. I enjoyed that as well. Those would be probably the songs I'd recommend. Again, there's some kind of middle-of-the-road type songs that are definitely feel like filler, especially, too, when there are songs that were on the band's previous album that they kind of just repurposed. And some songs kind of just go a little long. Again, that's the nature of the jam band genre, is songs are going to go longer, and that's fine. I guess for me, I was never a huge jam band fan, and also that's fun to say, jam band fan. Try saying that 5 times fast. I'll wait. Okay. Jam band fan. Yeah. So I'm definitely interested in genres not really know a whole lot about. So this was kind of pretty cool to kind of learn more about, and kind of the foundation of jam bands. So it got me to know, and it got to me to learn about some extra music that I wouldn't be familiar with. So, which is why I enjoy doing this podcast. So, yeah, this album, definitely, I'm glad I listened to it. Glad I listened to the song, and it's not Paul Simon. Not Paul Simon here. This is Rusted Root here. I enjoyed it overall. Just going through all the different types of jam bands and the history. And going through this album, again, there, you know, some of the songs were middle of the road. That's fine. At least they had some up-tempo. And then they had some decent slow songs. But for being a one-hit wonder, I mean, it's definitely a niche. You know, like unlike Dave Matthews Band, which, you know, definitely flourished, having such a huge, strong following, I guess, to this day. And Rusted Root, I don't believe really has that. Or if they do, it's a little smaller. But again, I can see why people are into jam bands. You know, great musicianship, no doubt about it. And it's not everyone's cup of tea. So I was very interested in just trying it out. So that's why I love about doing this podcast, is that it exposes different genres that I'd be familiar with, or, you know, really know a whole lot about. It's for me, Eric Kostenjäger. I am so glad you got to this point of the podcast. Very much happy to get back on the podcast train, toot toot, and get on the music bandwagon, because I love it. I love talking about music. I love talking about one-hit wonders. So that's my outro, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to sign off, but I have been your host, Eric Kostenjäger, and this has been One Hit Wonder Why. Ladies and gentlemen, have a pleasant day and a pleasant tomorrow.